Well, as Ronj mentioned earlier, over the weekend, he started seeing texts and tweets that President Trump had died, and there was this rumor spreading, and I was getting coffee with my friends, and they started chattering about it, that what is this conspiracy that Trump isn't alive? Well, of course, that's exactly what it was, is just a rumor, a conspiracy, but why did it start, and why do these things spread like wildfire? Joining us now is Mike Rothschild. He's a conspiracy theory journalist and expert. He has written The Storm is Upon Us and Jewish Space Lasers, looking at conspiracy theories and how they spread. And he joins us now. Mike, good to talk with you.
Oh, thanks for having me back on.
You know, before we get started, the last time we spoke with you, you had recently lost your house in the Eaton Fire in California. So we wanted to ask, how are you doing? How is the recovery process going?
Well, I really appreciate you asking. We are hanging in there. You know, I know that the rest of the world has a million other things to concentrate on, but you know, for us in Altadena and Pasadena, we're still here. We're putting our lives back together. We are making slow but steady progress, and you know, still taking care of each other and our community. You know, we're still out here. So, thank you for sparing a thought for us.
We're glad that things are moving in the right direction for you, and we appreciate you taking time today. So. The reason we had you on is because of this death hoax that happened over the weekend. How did it first start? Because like I said, or like Amy said, I woke up and I saw these tweets about it that had started like the night before, and everybody thought he was gone because nobody had seen him for 4 or 5 days or something like that. So how did this really get started?
Well, it was funny. It started on that Friday night, and I was at the Dodger game with my family, and I'm, you know, checking social media. I'm going, what's going on here? Is this actually happening? And then as you learn more about it, you go, no, it's not. And I think, like a lot of conspiracy theories and myths and hoaxes, it starts with a few real things that are then blown up massively out of proportion and then infused with sort of self-proclaimed expertise. I think with Trump, he hadn't spoken publicly in a few days, which is fairly unusual for Trump. His schedule for the Labor Day weekend was completely open. He had no public events. He's also been dealing with some health issues. He's been dealing with this swelling in his ankles. He's been dealing with this mysterious bruise on the back of his right hand, which he seems very intent on hiding. All of those things are happening. And then when you add all of those things together, you start to come up with a storyline that says, oh, he's secretly dead, or he's dying, or he had a stroke, or they're hiding him. And then people start looking at the traffic maps around Walter Reed Hospital, and they start spreading rumors about Trump family members touring the hospital or all of these other things happening. And it turns into a hoax, and it catches fire on social media on a long weekend when people are looking for a distraction from all of the insanity that's going on.
Well, I want to let's dissect too exactly who was spreading that information, because Vice President J.D. Vance tweeted out, if the media you consumed told you that Donald Trump was on his deathbed because he didn't do a press conference for 3 days, imagine what else they're lying to you about. And you replied, it wasn't the media that said Trump was dying. It was certain clout chasers on social media. Can you kind of break that down a little bit?
Sure. And I think it's important to draw a line between people who are speculating, people who are just kind of having a good time, you know, sharing memes, things like that. I don't think there's any harm in that. But there were people spreading or creating these 30-tweet threads about all of their diagnosis of Trump's medical issues, and people sharing what they thought were traffic maps from around Walter Reed showing closures. Those were people who were looking for viral clout and spreading things that were not true or were just completely taken out of context. I mean, the roads around Walter Reed are closed quite often because it's a military hospital. There are reasons for why things happen. There might be reasons why Trump has a large bruise on his hand. The White House has said it's from aspirin and vigorous handshaking. I mean, I don't exactly believe that, but we also don't know that they're lying. So yeah. I think there were a lot of people spreading speculation as fact rather than just simply having a good time and realizing that this probably wasn't real.
So is it that simple? People just, they get a kick out of starting a rumor like this and then it taking off and they can go back and tell their friends, look what I did. Is that what this is all about?
I think for some people it is. I think it is very easy to get viral traffic on social media by just spreading something that people are going to want to believe is true. Conspiracy theory influencers have been doing it for generations. You know, long before there was social media, people were, you know, passing out pamphlets based around conspiracies that they thought were true and wanted to be true and knew would drive them some sort of clout or whatever you called it back then. So I think it's very easy to spread hoax or myth as fact and see if it catches on.
So how lucrative is this, or can it be? We know some people do make a living with the conspiracy stuff. Alex Jones is one of the most famous weirdos. So how does this happen in terms of, revenue that these people generate by doing it?
Well, I think it's harder for left-leaning influencers to profit off it than the right. I mean, conspiracy theories have for a long time, maybe since after World War II, have been really the domain of the far right. And, you know, they're really the ones who've been making these books and then these films and then these sort of accounts. But I think, you know, X monetizes viral tweets. You can get podcast subscriptions. You get merchandise sales. We've seen now stories about some dark money going to leaning social media creators. It's not on the scale of what the far right does, but it's still out there. And if you create a lot of content that spreads hoaxes about, you know, Donald Trump is about to go to prison, or Donald Trump secretly, you know, had a stroke and was replaced with a body double, if you do it really well, you can make at least some amount of money off it. I think we're really seeing that right now.
You know, it was kind of interesting. Years ago, I was teaching a high school class, and one of the students had a thesis that she was going to try to argue, which I thought was really interesting, that Americans, those in the United States of America, are especially prone or primed for conspiracy theories because we're so, you know, fiercely independent, and everyone who came here was betrayed one way or another by their governments, right? If you're an immigrant and you're leaving a country. Is that something that you think does hold some water, that conspiracy theories really thrive here? Or is it like this in other countries as well?
It is definitely like this in other countries, and I've written a lot about historical examples of conspiracy theories or hoaxes or moral panics catching on. But there is something in the American character that is very prone to paranoia and feeling like they are out to get you and they are hiding something from you and only you can uncover the truth. I think there's this kind of stubborn individualism in Americans where we hitch up our wagons and go out west to start over and get away from what's going on in our old lives. I think there's this feeling that we're being lied to and exploited. And, you know, I think other people in other countries have that, but there is something very American in feeling like everyone is out to get us. We're sort of a nation built on both rebellion and, in some cases, paranoia and grievance.
This really has to... Okay. I feel like either this started with or it got much worse after the Kennedy assassination because of the conspiracies that have been prevalent for so long there. Is there something to that?
There was definitely a major industry that sprung up very quickly around the Kennedy assassination. And a lot of people who were earnestly looking for the truth and felt like the government was lying and felt like the Warren Commission was obfuscating and not telling the whole story, a lot of those people went down darker and more sordid paths with their conspiracism. But there is this feeling that the government is plotting against us and that they, you know, they had to get rid of somebody like Kennedy. And I think a lot of conspiracism stems from this idea that somebody like John F. Kennedy was this titan, he's this hero, he's untouchable. How could this loser who couldn't even defect right in Lee Harvey Oswald kill him? That's not supposed to happen. There had to be something else that happened there. And I think that feeling of that wasn't supposed to happen, therefore it didn't happen in the way we're being told about, I think that's very popular in conspiracy theorism, and it was very, very prevalent in the Kennedy assassination industry.
You know, and it's so interesting, like you bring that up on how people were dealing with the tragedy of the assassination. There has to be something behind it. Jennifer Senior, who writes for The Atlantic, wrote a piece called On Grief, and it was looking at how one family dealt with the loss of their son who died in the towers on 9/11, died in one of the towers on 9/11. Mm-hmm. And one, the mother was overcome with grief, and it kind of stopped her life. The father turned into a pretty hardcore conspiracy theorist, and she looks at how grief, like, you know, he couldn't accept that this just could happen, that a terrorist could fly a plane into a building and his son was dead. And it was a heartbreaking piece, but really interesting on how grief and loss can lead to conspiracy as well.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely a huge part of it. We want the things that happen in our lives to have meaning. We don't want us or our loved ones to be the victims of random chance or just a bad day or being in the wrong place at the wrong time. We want there to be some sort of order and reason to what's happening. I think conspiracism really provides that to people. It provides reasons why things happen. It provides order in chaos. It provides explanation to things that defy explanation. That's why assassination attempts and mass shootings and terrorist attacks create conspiracy theories, because something happened that could happen to any of us, but it happened to these specific people. There had to be a reason why. There has to be a plot behind it. And unfortunately, the truth is that the vast majority of the time, there isn't a reason, there isn't a plot, or there is a plot in the case of 9/11, and it's just not the plot that we wanted it to be.
Yeah, so in that case, in trying to convince people that there isn't always something sinister and orderly about these major events that happen, are there actual numbers for that? Is there data that's to say, look, it's 99% of the time, it is actually just chaos?
You know, it's really hard to come up with hard data for all of these things, because certainly with polling about conspiracy beliefs, people will lie and they won't talk about things mm-hmm. in the way pollsters want them to. But I think when you're dealing with a conspiracy theory, and I think Kennedy is a really good example, is to boil away a lot of the ephemera around it, the extraneous stuff. You know, who did Oswald talk to in New Orleans with the CIA? That doesn't so much matter. If you look at Kennedy as Lee Harvey Oswald was a trained marksman. He had a fairly easy open shot at a slow-moving, unprotected, immobile target. And many, many people have tried to make that shot in various. So if you look at those facts, there's really no need for a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. You can want to believe things. You can want to believe that there was some higher meaning or motive behind it. But ultimately, the facts just play out what happened as how we were told it happened. So I think it's always important to just go back to the simple, basic facts about something. And I think with this Trump rumor, you can say the same thing. There wasn't any actual evidence that he had died, certainly, or that he'd had a stroke or a massive medical event. None of the things that would happen if a president did actually suffer one of those things were happening. I think people were just speculating and getting carried away with it. And that's okay, but it does reflect badly on our media, because we don't really still know how to talk about these things in a productive way.
Mike, I know we need to let you go, but I did want to ask, because this isn't a tragedy. It was the moon landing. Why are there so many conspiracies that, you know, we didn't land on the moon, especially since there were subsequent moon landings? Why did that become so popular?
You know, I think it's another one of those things where, you know, with a lot of these things, it's a tragedy that wasn't supposed to happen. I think with the moon landing, it was something extraordinary. And I think there is a sort of need in people to find a real explanation for something very outsized or unexpected that they don't quite understand. So you have all of these people who've dedicated all of this wasted time to disproving the moon landing, when it's actually quite easy to prove that we went to the moon. There's certain things that happened to those spacecrafts that only could have happened if they were in space, and only could have happened if they were on the moon. The moon landing was a wonderful thing. I wish we'd been landing on the moon for the last 50 years. I don't know why there's a need to take something great and turn it into something terrible, but some people are just like that.
Oh, it's fun stuff, man. I feel like that moon landing conspiracy that we did it in a soundstage, that's just really funny to me. That's one of those conspiracies I find to be very funny.
I did have a friend whose dad was, he's like, I can prove it's North Dakota.
Oh, can you?
I was like, really?
Oh, sure, take me there, you dork. Also, Buzz Aldrin can punch all the people in the face, and I'll have a great time with it. Hey, Mike, we're glad things are going better. after the fire for you, and thank you for talking with us about this stuff. It's super interesting, and we'll do it again.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Mike Rothschild, conspiracy theory journalist, expert, author of a couple of great books, The Storm Is Upon Us and Jewish Space Lasers. It's just
fun.
I think it's fun to take the air out of conspiracies.
Yeah.
I used to really love them, but I grew up. I used to really believe in the Kennedy one.
Really?
Yes.
I do know this. You told me that.
Yeah.
I think it's cute.
It is. That I did that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I grew out of it.